Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of August 2018. Guys, I got news for you. Summer's almost over, but that doesn't mean you're not wonderful. Doesn't mean you're not a masterpiece. Doesn't mean you're not beautifully made, important to people, because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator. Whether that's a god or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem, you, my friend, are thirsty for knowledge, addicted to wonder. You are an oddball. And here on this show, well, you're family, and we are one. Guys, this is episode 57 of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. Hope you guys really enjoyed last month's show. We had wonderful guest, Mr. William Devening, on. And everyone seemed to really enjoy that Bigfoot show. If you guys haven't had a chance to check it out, make sure you check it out. And tonight we have another really big name, really, I believe, in the field, in Thomas Fusco. So later on this show, you'll have Thomas on. Thomas has got a little something that a lot of other people don't have. And that's, well, he's got a theory about how all this stuff actually works in the paranormal and how it all might be related. So I hope you guys really enjoy my guest a little later in the show. As you guys know, as this is the episode 57, we ever draw near to that 1,000 subscriber mark. I feel like I've been saying it forever, but, you know, we were like 10 away last time I checked, so we're doing really good with subscribers, or in Podbean's case, followers. Just to guys let you know, please take a second and follow the show. It's pretty simple. You got your Podbean app on your phone, you go to my show, you click on the episode you want to listen to, you basically open up the episode in the Podbean app. And, I mean, you can see it right there in front of you. You can comment, you can like, you can subscribe or follow, as Podbean says. You know, it's pretty much right there at your fingertips. It'll take a second, but a great way to support the show is to follow it and leave a comment on an episode you really enjoyed. And I would certainly appreciate that. And that goes for anybody out who's out there, you know, doing the iTunes thing and stuff like that. I'd really, really appreciate that. Unfortunately, I do have to start this episode with a little bit of bad news. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to mention that comment thing to you guys. First off, I usually don't promote that till right before going through the news, but I got to try to change up format because, you know, unfortunately, the format has been changed up for me in my personal life. Anybody who's been a longtime listener of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast knows the reason why I got into the paranormal stuff. That is my father, Don. Dad's been fighting really renal cancer and just, he's been doing this now for really almost 10 years. He's in his ninth year now on chemotherapy. And, unfortunately we got the news a few weeks ago since the last show went up that, Dad's actually got Hodgkin's lymphoma. Now this type of cancer is a brand new cancer. It has nothing to do with the current cancer he already has. And you can imagine it's been an incredibly just upsetting month for me, but for my family in general. So what I would like for you guys to do My dad is actually an avid listener to the show. He listens to it whenever he can. I would love for you guys to just send him a little prayer. Say a little prayer for him. Send him a little prayer in the comments section. Just know we're thinking about him. And, you know, Dad, I want you to know that I love you very, very much if you listen to this episode right now. And no matter how bad things get, I will always put out this show in your honor. And I've said that right from the very beginning. But, you know, Dad's attitude is always awesome when it comes to this. I mean, he's been fighting cancer now for almost 10 years. And now that he's got a new form, he kind of laughed and said, I guess this must be my bonus cancer. So, like, there you go. I personally have a hard time laughing about it, but Dad's in very high spirits. So I think what would make Dad's day would be to know that there is people out there who are praying for him, because my dad is a very religious and spiritual man. So I'll leave it at that. I want you guys to absolutely flood the Podbean app. Go in there and write a little thing. Say, get well soon, Don. Prayers are with you, Don. Do that kind of thing. And I'll show it to Dad and let him know that the world out there at large really is rooting for him and cheering him on. So, give you an idea, like, how far along we are in the year right now. Like, how crazy is this? My next episode will be, you know, coming out in September. It'll be September 1st. So I want you to think about that for a second now. September 1st means back to school, right? And then the next episode after that will be October 1st, which means it will be my Halloween special. So to give you an idea how fast this year is flying by. Man, oh man, this year just, I've never had a year in my life that's got this quick. And I hope that wherever you're to right now, even if your year has gone by really fast, I hope you're having just a really great time. And thank you so much for making me a part of your life once a month. I certainly do appreciate it. Some good news to go along with a little bit of that bad I mentioned earlier. Well, you know, one of the things I tell people about my show is that it's a paranormal variety show. And when I explain that it has segments in it, you know, it has the paranormal news, and then it has the MUFON Minute, and then it has oddities, and then it has a guest. Someone told me, he said, you know, John, that's pretty cool, but it's not really a big variety of stuff. And it kind of dawned on me, you know what, you're absolutely right. There is a little less variety on this show. And it's not by, it is by design, but it's not really a fault of mine. I just haven't really thought about adding a new segment in a while. So I said, you know what, since this is the first episode of the fourth year, since we're going into this, I thought I'd add a brand new segment. So I went back over my guests, and I seen what ones would probably work with me and what ones enjoyed it, and I came up with the idea of actually approaching Betty Collins, my former guest, who you guys all love. She's an energy worker right here in St. John's, Newfoundland. She's a homegrown one, just like me. And I had a little chat with her, and I just brainstormed with her, and I think that we found a segment for her to do every show from now on. Don't fret, we're still keeping Laura on board with the MUFON Minute, but now we're going to have one from Betty as well. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy that. That'll be coming up a little later in the show. So there you go. Our show is getting bigger and better by the minute, and I hope you guys really enjoy the work I put into it this month. Anyhow, moving right along with this month's paranormal news. Okay, when I think the word hybrid, the first thing that pops in my mind is what? Probably one of those cars. Well, let's just say that the car thing is not really what's in everyone's mind here in Hawaii. A whale-dolphin hybrid. A whale-dolphin hybrid has been discovered off Hawaii, and it's made official. Originally spotted last year, this unusual animal has since been confirmed to be a genuine cross breed. In a new report from Cascadia Research Collective, scientists have concluded that the whale dolphin is the result of a melon-headed whale breeding with a rough-toothed dolphin. We had the photos and suspected it was a hybrid from morphological characteristics intermediate between species, said marine mammal expert Robin Baird. Most unusual finding it is. Intriguingly, one of its parents, the melon-headed whale, is incredibly rare in the waters around Hawaii, which makes this unorthodox pairing even more of a mystery. Hybrids among different species of whales and dolphins have been previously recorded, but this is the first case of a hybrid between two species, and only the third confirmed case with genetics of a wild-born hybrid between two species in the family Delphinidae, or, you know, dolphins, Baird told Fox News. If we find it again, we'd like to try to get a biopsy sample of the melon-headed whale it was associated with, as well as get underwater footage and images to better assess the morphology And, you know, there was this guy who did an article on this on the news, and he was just so good. It caught my eye right away. So why don't you guys just listen to this? He's so good. Just listen to his voice.
Whale and a dolphin mated. A new report in Cascadia Research Collective confirms a rough-toothed dolphin, which is what you see in the foreground, mated with a melon-headed whale to produce the animal you see in the background. Last year, researchers spotted the unusual creature off the coast of Kauai, Hawaii. They were able to get a biopsy and study its genetics. They say that the melon-headed whale is rare in the area where the hybrid was discovered.
Where the hybrid was discovered. Man, that guy's voice is awesome. I can see why he got his job. Man, just imagine finding that off the coast of Hawaii. I guess you'd say that was a whale of a tail, a hybrid whale of a tail, if you will. I mean, it's amazing what we can find in the ocean, but there's one thing we never did find, and that's Amelia Earhart. You know, we have just picked our brains, really, for, oh my God, it must be 70 years now, more than that, hey? What was it, 1937? I mean, that's a really, really long, long time, and we're talking 80 years here that we've been searching for Amelia Earhart. When her plane, you know, disappeared over the Pacific Ocean during an attempt to circumnavigate the globe in her Lockheed Model 10 Electra in 1937, the question of what remained or what had happened to her will go on to become one of the most enduring mysteries of the modern age. In recent years, however, clues have been found suggesting that Earhart's plane may have gone down somewhere in the remote Pacific atoll of the Nicomaro, and that the aviator and her navigator, Fred Noonan, may have been survived for several days on a small island while awaiting rescue. Now, Richard Gillespie, executive director of the International Group of Historic Aircraft Recovery, is set to publish a new report detailing an analysis of radio distress signals picked up during the time Earhart would have been waiting for help to arrive. The messages, which were picked up by both government agencies and individual radio operators, paint a harrowing picture of the aviator's desperate attempts to signal for assistance. The last message, which was received by Thelma Lovelace of St. John, New Brunswick, Canada, approximately 5 days after the crash, stated, "Can you read me? Can you read me? This is Amelia Earhart. Please come in. We have taken in water. My navigator is badly hurt. We are in need of medical care and must have help. We can't hold on much longer." Earlier this year, it was revealed that human bones discovered on a remote island in the region back in 1940 may have been those of Earhart herself. If the remains of her plane could be found as well, it would solve the mystery once and for all. We're one step closer to figuring that one out anyway. And, you know, rightfully so, 1937, way, way, way too long to still not know where Amelia Earhart is. How about the ex-NASA scientist who's claiming UFOs are real? You know, it seems like every time someone retires or goes into hiding, they have this little thing to throw out, any professor in particular. And this is an interesting read. Professor Kevin Nuth maintains that the truth is out there and that governments are covering up evidence of E.T. A physics professor at the State University of New York in Albany, Nuth has recently published an article calling for scientists to thoroughly examine the available evidence of UFOs here on Earth. Much is his belief in extraterrestrial visitation, and it stems from his own personal experiences. Perhaps the most important of these occurred in 1988 when he was a graduate student. At the time, he had dismissed many claims that by his physics professor that UFOs were shooting down nuclear missiles. He soon changed his mind when, years later, he saw a recording of a press conference during which officials from the U.S. Air Force had described the occurrence of several similar UFO-related incidents. These days, Nuth remains adamant that evidence of such events is being actively covered up and maintains that the topic of UFOs is still considered taboo in the scientific community. "I think UFO skepticism has become something of a religion with an agenda, discounting the possibility of extraterrestrials without scientific evidence, while often providing silly hypotheses describing only one of two aspects of a UFO encounter, reinforcing the popular belief that there is a conspiracy," he wrote. Nuth has also detailed how documented UFO sightings spanning many years, coupled with secretive UFO studies and declassified files from UFO governments, represents evidence that something is definitely going on, even though there is nothing that stands out as absolutely conclusive. "While there is no single case from which there exists evidence that would stand up scientific rigor, there are cases with simultaneous observations by multiple reliable witnesses, along with radar returns and photographic evidence, revealing patterns of activity that are compelling," he wrote. So there you go, another man of science saying we should be looking up for friends, or hopefully not foes. You know, one thing that a lot of people love is home security. And let's be honest with ourselves. Home security is awesome. It's very, very important, especially this time of year when everyone's out vacationing and stuff, to have your home looked after. And don't worry, this is not some strange plug for some product I don't believe in. This is actually kind of creepy because a woman has photographed a ghost in her yard using a game camera she had set up in her garden for just that. Expecting to see photographs of cats and foxes, Tia was particularly taken aback when, upon browsing through the images, she found one which showed a figure standing in her front yard. The photograph had been taken on Saturday night at 8:58 p.m. while she had been away camping. She was like, totally shocked, I would imagine. We were shocked, she said. Initially, I freaked out because I think there's somebody in our yard. Who the heck? It's 9 o'clock at night. I mean, for crying out loud, who's at our house? Even stranger was the fact that there was no sign of the figure on any other image, despite the fact that the camera takes a picture at 10-second intervals. If somebody was walking up our driveway, it would have caught a photo of them much sooner at the edge of our lawn, she said. We've put the camera back up in hopes that maybe we'll catch it again, but until now we have to think that this is some kind of spirit. Wow. Really, really cool. And of course, you guys can check this out. This picture really is on, just look up Google and look up Quest for the Unknown. It should come up. Look up ghost picture on game camera. And what really blows me away about this game camera is the writings on the bottom of the game camera. It says camera one and it gives a date and all that stuff. I used to have a game camera just like this back when I was a ghost hunter. So it's kind of cool to see someone actually after capturing something with it. And you know, we'll go to great lengths to capture weird sounds and voices and stuff, won't we? Oh man, how we might even fly a spacecraft all the way to Saturn. Back in 2017, Cassini picked up the sounds of plasma waves traveling between Saturn and Enceladus. The otherworldly whistling noise is the result of the spacecraft converting electromagnetic radiation, or radio waves, into audible sound using its Radio Plasma Wave Science, or RPWS, instrument. The audio is not a recording of actual sound, as due to the lack of vibrational medium, sound waves cannot travel through the vacuum of space. Enceladus is this little generator going around Saturn, and we know it is a continuous source of energy, said planetary scientist Ali Salamane of the University of Iowa. Now we find that Saturn responds by launching signals in the form of plasma waves through the circuit of magnetic field lines connecting to the Enceladus hundreds of thousands of miles away. So just think about that. This thing is sending off like a radio transmission, basically. It's sending it off between the two planets. Do you ever wonder what it sounds like to be Saturn? Well, you're about to be treated, folks. Listen in real close. This is what it sounds like. That is very weird. That is the weirdest thing. Oh my God. Well, there you go. That's what Saturn sounds like. Awesome. Oh, can things get any stranger? You know, there's a few constants in the world right now. You look up in the sky at night and you see stars or clouds or, you know, the moon. And in daytime, when you look up, you might not be able to look for very long because the sun is there. Except in Soviet Russia, because in Soviet Russia, mystery has become reality as sun has disappeared over Central Russia. Residents were left perplexed last Friday when an area the size of the UK descended into darkness for 3 whole hours. The peculiar incident, which primarily affected Arctic districts of the Yucatan region, was accompanied by a drop in temperature and the appearance of a large dark cloud which covered the sky. Some have speculated that the phenomenon was the result of a meteorite impact in the region, while others have suggested that the Russian government may have been conducting nuclear tests. Messages are going around about the light flash registered by the U.S. satellites, followed by an increase in radioactive level and unusual activity of the military, said one resident. We are never going to be told if this was true or false. Others describe feeling a strange sensation during the incident. Couldn't see a thing without switching the lights on, another resident stated. We took torches to walk outside, but actually no one wanted to be on the street because the feeling was as if something heavy in the air was pressing on her chest. So far, no definitive explanation for the phenomenon has been found. So there you go. They literally turned the lights out in Russia. Very, very strange indeed. Guys, we've had whale-dolphin hybrids, Amelia Earhart's distress calls picked up, NASA scientists retiring and claiming also that UFOs are real, a woman photographed a ghost, well, in her driveway, of all places. We've got the sound that's plasma waves traveling between Saturn and Enceladus, which was just super, super cool. And, of course, the story that's told, the mystery as sun disappears over central Russia. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
I think it's a strange vanity that makes us think we're the only ones in the solar system.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for August 2018. MUFON received a total of 548 UFO reports for the month of June, where 364 originated in the U.S., with Canada having 43, and the United Kingdom having 45. The sphere remained the most reported UFO shape, with 92 cases being reported. A dish shape was the second most reported at 66, and triangles were the third most popular to be reported, with them having 49. There were also 75 reports, which included testimony where the object was less than 100 feet away, so pretty close. A Canadian witness at Carlson Place, Ontario, reported watching a UFO moving northwest above the phone and power lines, according to testimony in case 88551 from the MUFON Witness Reporting Database, and then subsequently summarized by Roger Marsh. The witness was driving home from work at 7 p.m. on December 1st, 2017. "I noticed a white object moving above the power lines," the witness stated. "I'd stopped my car to make sure that it was not light deflecting from the sky, which was overcast. That's when I saw the UFO move northwest and moving around between the lines. The object was maybe 10 to 15 feet in diameter. It's hard to explain because the best way I can describe the UFO, it was shaped like a fried egg, with the object misty white and the middle a brighter white. It also moved like a flying magic carpet. I followed it for half a kilometer and then I was intrigued by what I was seeing, and I guess in awe since I had never seen something like this, and as low. I had seen UFOs before, but only moving lights in the distance." Canadian MUFON chief investigator Ryan Stacey closed this case as an unknown aerial vehicle. Carlton Place is a town in eastern Ontario, about 46 kilometers west of downtown Ottawa. The Mutual UFO Network is currently looking for information and additional witnesses for the following incredible event. "We are primarily searching to verify a government experiment that involved high school students that took place at UC Berkeley in Northern California in 1981. They ultimately were shown a creature in a cage. We are trying to find people that were participants that were involved as well. According to the witness that was involved in the experience, they were one of two high school students selected from their school to be part of this experiment. There were dozens of pairs from other schools across California as well, always one girl and one boy. We are not sure the metrics by which they were chosen. Regardless, the experiment was run by the U.S. federal government, consisting of a several-day stay on the Berkeley campus, during which the students were to be housed and fed by government representatives, apparently, quote, men in black types. The first few days involved experimentation and psychic powers, such as telekinesis and remote viewing. In the telekinetic sessions, for example, the students were asked to mentally spin a top, which was balanced at the end of a stick they were holding. In the remote viewing sessions, they were supposed to see what was placed in front of a person in another room, although the witness could only accurately view a hole in the ceiling of that room. But the most important aspect of this experiment took place on the final day. The students were seated in an auditorium, the exits of which were all guarded by armed uniformed soldiers. The students were told that they would be shown something which may terrify them, but warned them not to try to leave the room. What was shown to them was a cage with a creature sitting inside. The creature, which was described as one of the greys, looked sick and frail. Some of the students panicked upon seeing the creature, and some calmly went towards the cage. But at the end of the experience, the students were warned not to speak of anything which had happened during the past few days, or else they and their families would disappear. The witness has kept two minor details from the story as a way to verify whether another person was indeed there, the description of the creature's cage, and something that was shouted in the room before the person was removed. If you or someone you know has been involved in this experiment, please contact d.rugne@mufonsat.com. All this information is also available on the news section at www.mufon.com. Remember, as you head up to your cabin this summer, be sure to keep your eyes to the skies. If you see something interesting, be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Hopefully we can make this a little more active and a little more fun in the future. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
Alright guys, welcome to Oddities, 10 very strange, very weird facts that are actually true. You know, you think I'd get this down pat by now. It's been, what, 2 years since I started doing Oddities? Jeez. 10 strange facts that are true about an odd, odd world. And since it's August, the last month of the summer, I figured I'd honor August and, well, tell you 10 strange facts about August. Number one, August is named after Augustus, the first emperor of Rome, who chose it as it was the month of his greatest triumphs. And, of course, he died in August AD 14. There's a triumph for you. Number two, until 8 BC, the Romans called August Sextilis, and it was the 6 months of their year. I like that. Sextilis. I hope I get lucky with my girlfriend on Sextilis. Number three, the Anglo-Saxons call August by the name Weodmanath, or Weed Month, as it was the month when weeds grow most rapidly. Number four, August is the only name of a month that features among the top 100 men's names. April, Maya, and June are all the women's top 1,000. I don't know any guys named August, except that guy from that movie. Yeah, anyway. Number five, 22% of Norwegians named August were born in August. Okay, well, that's pretty much a given. Number six, men are banned from knitting on jersey during the fishing season from August to September. Men are banned from knitting on jersey. What does that even mean? Number seven, Henry VI, Part One and The Tempest are the only Shakespeare plays that mention the word August. Number eight, the birthstone in August is the peridot or sardonyx. The flower is the glorious and gladiolus or poppy. Yeah, it's the poppy, you know. It's pretty. August is the only month this year that begins on a Thursday. In a leap year, February begins on the same day as the week of August. Of course, that doesn't matter because this is from years ago. Disregard number nine. Number 10. In August, chlor and melancholy much increase, from whence proceeds long-lasting fevers and argues not easily crude. R. Sanders, 1679. I have no idea what the hell that meant. But you know what? They're 10 strange facts. They're true. Except for number nine because this article's dated. And I still love you guys. You know what my problem is? I haven't celebrated Sextilis enough. That's my problem. Oh my God. You know what? I need some advice. I really, really do. I can't keep going like this. It's time to check in with Betty. Guys, enjoy the latest addition to the Ogden Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thanks, John, and greetings from Betty, your oracle, with your 5 minutes of wisdom for your consideration and enjoyment. Before I begin today, any names mentioned in this recording are not necessarily real names. They have been changed to protect the innocent. That's all I'll say. Today's topic is a question I have been asked so many times I can't even count. Are we all psychic? And of course I say a resounding yes, we are all psychic. What would make me any more psychic than you? So I realized my own psychic center opened back in 1980. And at that point, I actually realized it. My husband and I were sitting watching television one evening very quietly. And I suddenly looked at him and I said, Joe Smith is on his way. And my husband said, how do you know that? Why would he be coming here? And Joe Smith happened to be a friend of my husband's. And I said, I don't know. Coming for a visit, I guess. Less than 5 minutes later, the doorbell rang. Opened the door. Who was standing there? Joe Smith. My husband looked at me and he said, how did you know that? And I said, I don't know. I just knew. And at that point, I also knew, if we put our ego out of the way, our ego being our personality, the ego is what speaks the words that I'm saying now. This is all ego when I talk. When we converse with people, we're generally doing it through, and if we're being true to ourselves, we do it through our heart. But a lot of people, words come out of our mouths. A lot of times we don't know where they come from. The words that come out of our mouths that we don't know where they come from our psychic center. So how do we know if we're psychic or not? Well, it's as easy as listening. So you ask a question of yourself, maybe should I do this today? And all of a sudden you hear, yes, a very quick, yes, do it. Then go do it. Because that was your heart. That was your psychic center. If you hear a conversation like, well, I don't know, that probably isn't a good thing to do today because this might happen and that might happen and this might happen and that might happen, that's ego. This might happen and that might happen are all negative. They all take on a negative connotation because you're dreaming things up. You're basically calling them forward. Being psychic kind of will let you, and you, not even being psychic, using your psychic center would be to listen to what the question you just asked, listen to the answer you've received, take a step back. Okay, was there a conversation in that? Or was it a really quick answer? If it was a really quick answer, that's the one I should go for. That psychic part of you is the part, that gut feeling, that very first thing you think when you come across any question at all, whether it be, should I turn the corner right now because that truck looks like he's coming really fast, or whether it's you're standing in the supermarket and you're questioning an item that you're going to buy, if it will agree with you or not. If you pick that up and right away it's like, put it back down in your head, you put it back down, please walk away from it. Something higher, the higher part of you, the psychic part of you, because the psychic part of you is higher than this third dimensional where we live right now space. Many years ago, I was told, I had a fortune telling, I had a card reading, and I really was considering, I think I should do that. In the meantime, I've done that. However, I was told back then, you best be careful. And I kind of questioned. I looked at this person who was talking to me and said, what do you mean, be careful? And this person says, once you open it up, you will see the good, the bad, and the ugly, whether you want to see it or not. You cannot turn it off. Guess what, folks? You can turn it off. You can, because I've learned to read tarot now. So I'm using my psychic ability more. I'm doing a course called Psychic and Intuitive Development. You can find out more about being psychic, Psychic and Intuitive Development, and all of that on my Facebook page, Betty Collins E-Factor, on my regular Facebook page, Betty Collins. I also have a YouTube channel. Subscribe if you want. I've got several videos on there. It's been a blast today. Back to you, John.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight's guest has devoted over two decades of research into the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena with the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework that has eluded mankind for generations. Is that making you scratch your head? I would probably think so, but that's okay, because we got a guiding light. The man's name is Thomas P. Busco. He's on my show tonight. He's got a bone to pick with us, maybe more like a toe to kind of explain, which is actually a theory of everything. How is it that paranormal phenomena actually exists? Tonight, we're going to delve into that a little tiny bit. We're going to learn about super geometry, and we're going to have a super awesome time. Thomas Fusco, how are you tonight, sir?
Hey, great, John. Thanks for having me on the show, man.
It's about time. It took me 3 or 4 years to hammer down on Behind the Cosmic Veil, your book, enough to actually have you on. So, if anybody who picks up this book knows, you're going to have to read it a few times to really let it sink in, because there's a lot to digest.
Yeah, there is. This is something that has basically never been done before, not on something of this scale. And John, what we're working with, and I talk about it a little bit, if I recall, in my introduction, is that if we take the body of paranormal phenomena and consider that a legitimate body of evidence, and by that I mean all we have to do is have one valid apparition sighting in the entire history of humanity, or one disembodied voice heard, then we have to stand back from a scientific viewpoint and say, what kind of a universe can allow these things to happen? How is the universe put together that can allow and accommodate these kind of phenomena as well as all the other observations that we have? And so when considering what was taught to me in university about the way the universe is put together, that particular model just didn't cut the mustard. It didn't accommodate what we might call the supernatural or even the parapsychological. So I realized I had to sit down and actually put together a whole new theory of everything. And it's a conceptual theory, but it's the first one that's come along that has really embodied all these different elements into a single system where they all coexist peacefully, where the previous barriers between them begin to break down and actually answer questions about all these different disciplines that the disciplines as they existed before never really were able to address correctly.
So there you have it. Thomas, well, this sounds to me a lot like people have kind of gotten away from the idea of this stuff actually exists, and now we're focusing on the how. And that, to me, is really, really interesting. But, of course, in order to make that work, we need a theory. So, well, without stubbing your toe, tell me about yours, your theory of everything. What is it?
Well, it's hard to put simply in a nutshell. It's very difficult to put in a Reader's Digest version, but there are certain features about it which are easy to understand. And what we have right now in physics, the predominant view of established physics, is that we have what I call a two-state reality. And what that means is that we have a theory about quantum physics, about the microscopic level, the world of the very small, at the atomic and the subatomic level. And this is called quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum field theory. And they have an entire theory build up on how to explain what goes on in that particular world. Then we have the world at large. We have the relativistic state or the macro state. And that is explained very well by Einstein's relativity. The problem is that the two are incongruous. They don't match together. We have to use two different systems to describe the same reality. So that, we all know, is wrong. From a theoretical physicist point of view, we all know that this is not correct. It's the best tools that we have, but there are issues involved in having to have two different theoretical systems to describe a single reality. The other aspect of it, John, is that the mainstream establishment of science and physics today is still in a materialistic paradigm. And what is meant by that is that they define reality as all that is physical. And all that is physical is reality. And there's nothing that lies outside of that. Everything that is reality is physical and vice versa. And this is where we come up into these quandaries, because we essentially have more observations than we have physical content in the universe to explain it. We're supposed to be in a system where everything is an action-reaction, cause and effect. And yet we have gotten to the point over the last several decades where we have gathered more observations, more effects than we can find causes for within the physical universe. And this is where we start making up imaginary physical substances like dark matter and dark energy to explain these phenomena that have no apparent physical cause. What supergeometry does, which is the name of his theory, is actually comes up with a third state of reality. And rather than being very ambiguous, like it's always been philosophically, like a spirit world or that kind of a thing, it actually gives it a name and a face and a structure. And this is something that is above what is geometric. That's where the name implies or comes from. So now we have a three-state reality. We have a super geometric, which you may call pre-physical. And then we have relativity, which is the physical on the large. And we have quantum physics or quantum mechanics, which is a description of the physical reality on the small. And I actually gave him, John, in a little bit of a incorrect sequence, because in the supergeometric model, primary reality is the supergeometric. It is what lays above the physical. And then comes the microscopic. Then comes the quantum world, which emanates. It emerges out of the super physical, the supergeometric, and ultimately materializes into the universe at large, which is the relativistic world that we're all familiar with. Absolutely. And that we interact with all the time.
And then bingo bango, now we have a kind of a jump off point to some paranormal, different types of paranormal activity, different types of paranormal circumstances and happenings, correct?
Absolutely. One of the things that it does for us from a scientific point of view is that in the current model in physics, where we have these two states, a two-state reality, we can't really put them together. We either have to look at column A or column B. What a three-state reality does is that if we have the supergeometric that is not physical yet, and then we have the reality state of relativity, which is fully materialized reality, we can now see the quantum state as a transitional form between what is not yet physical and what is fully physical. When we look at it from that perspective, suddenly the veil is lifted, and many of the things that we see that seem paradoxical in our observations of the subatomic world suddenly become clear. We can finally understand what's going on. Now, if this is the case, this leads us to a couple things. First of all, it tells us that reality that we know, the physical universe, is still materializing. That this is a process that hasn't stopped. It's one of the things that my theory uses to explain what the expansion of space-time is, universal expansion. But the other thing that it does for us, it tells us that we can have physically observable phenomena that we can observe, we can measure, we can even record that can materialize in the macroscopic, in the relativistic state. And this is a perfect model for what happens in paranormal phenomena. Because in my work, to give a scientific definition of what the paranormal is, give you an example. Let's say we're talking about a voice, and we're in a dark room, but we have a partner there, somebody with us, and he's talking to us. He or she is talking to us, and we hear it. It's a normal voice, but the cause is normal because it's connected to a set of vocal cords. And the vocal cords are physically, locally connected to the air column that is vibrating with the propagating acoustic wave that reaches our eardrums. That's a normal event. That's a normal voice. In a paranormal event, what we have is that the effect is the same, John. We still hear it and can record it as a normal voice. The effect is normal. But the cause isn't locally connected. There's no physical cause in the room that's creating the effect, which is what makes it paranormal. It's something that literally comes out of thin air.
And also makes it a non-local causality. I love it. Now I understand that part. Continue.
Yes. One of the early things I ran into, John, with my work, was that I realized I had to give a scientific definition that was scientifically meaningful and relevant to what quote-unquote paranormal is. Even today, within that community, paranormal is a term that's used. It's like this catch-all basket. Anything weird or odd, like chupacabra and Bigfoot and UFOs and whatever else is going on, your dead Aunt Mary, whatever, everything gets dumped into this big basket that's called the paranormal. Well, you know, Dr. Stephen Rohr called that kind of thing a feathery realm, where it's just really ambiguous and vaporous. So pulling from established physics, particularly quantum mechanics, what we have when we have an effect that has no local physical cause, it's called non-locality or non-local causality, which means that whatever is causing the effect is not local to the cause. Even in a radio broadcast, people would think, well, you know, that's moving through the air, and they think it's, in a way, they kind of think it's non-local. But the broadcast equipment is physically connected to the antenna, which is propagating an electromagnetic wave carrying the modulations of the information that reaches our radio receiver, and then in turn, our receiver translates it into the equivalent of what the information was being sent to it, carried along the wave. There's a physical connection all the way down the line. But, you know, if our radio just started playing something that there was no broadcast for, that would be non-local. And so paranormal phenomena works this way.
I think it's actually brilliant because now, let's be honest, so often or not, people are out, say, for example, I'll just use the ghost hunting thing because it's what I'm most familiar with. People are out doing the paranormal investigating, and what do they get? They get the footsteps, but very seldom do they see the feet that are attached to those footsteps. So now we get an idea that, well, those feet, well, they're not actually in our visible reality. That's so interesting, and it's just so nice to have an idea out there and to maybe stop fantasizing and going crazy over the fact that this stuff actually exists and start coming up with some ideas of how we can figure that out. So, which leads me to my next question. Is there any telltale signs in the research you've come across of the emergence? Like, you mentioned that it has to emerge from that locale. Are there anything out there people could be looking for?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, some experiments have already been conducted based on this principle. One of the characteristics of a true scientific theory, and that term theory gets tossed around in a lot of different ways at times where, you know, it's not being used accurately. A scientific theory makes predictions that are experimentally testable. In other words, if this particular model, this theoretical model is correct, then what that would mean, if we conduct a particular experiment, we are going to find a particular result that this theory predicts we'll find. If we find something that isn't what is predicted by the theory, then we falsified the theory. We've done something that has proved it wrong. If we take a look at another theory, and that makes a different prediction, and then we try to test that, and that doesn't work, that theory's wrong. So to try to put this in a, again, like in a Reader's Digest format, what my theory says in essence is that what brings about paranormal events is the exact same mechanism that brought the universe into existence. This, John, is where it gets giant, scary, monstrous, you know, blow your head open when you think about this. What I'm saying is that the universe that began as a Big Bang began as a non-physical singularity. It was a single coordinate. It was not physical. It was not subject to the dimensions of space and time. And yet space-time emerged from it. And what also emerged is information, which began to materialize not only as the geometry of space-time itself, but the primordial material content, the primordial particles, began to form from this information that emerged from this similarity or this singularity. In a paranormal event, we're having the same thing. We're having information that is not stored locally. It doesn't, I mean, if you're seeing a manifestation or a apparition of dead Aunt Mary who died 100 years ago, hey, we know where her local source is. It's rotting in a grave somewhere. Mm-hmm. There is no local source for an apparition of dead Aunt Mary. So it's coming from somewhere else, and yet it's going through a process of materializing. Now, if this theory stands correct, and I believe it is, what we will observe is that paranormal event will actually emerge from what we would call an emergence point. And we would see certain characteristics of the local environment begin to change because something is materializing in that local environment. And we would see the same kinds of things that took place at the beginning of the universe, only on a micro scale. We would see the emergence of an electromagnetic field. We would see on the surface of this emergent point a heat signature generated by the same effect as the electromagnetic field. In the middle of this expanding bubble of space-time, at least temporarily, until the laws of equilibrium balance what's outside from what's inside, we would get a lower density of air inside that bubble, and we would have a cold spot directly adjacent to the heat signature. That's nothing that any paranormalist has ever been able to explain before, or any paranormal model. We would have, if the expansion was fast enough, we would have a mystery breeze. We would have the emergence of an independent gravitational field. And one of the real common characteristics that people describe on the onset of a paranormal event is a feeling of heaviness. And in essence, and I'm trying to give the Reader's Digest version, John, if you were to sit down with a physicist who was very familiar with Einsteinian space-time and relativistic theory on that level, that aspect of it, and ask them what would happen if a Einstein-Rosen bridge began to open up locally, like in a living room, a small opening mouth, let's say it's a foot across, and ask that physicist what we would observe, you would have to hold your laughter back as that person described many of the events that occur in haunted houses, and would not even know he was describing a haunted house to you. He wouldn't even think about it.
Interesting stuff. You know, one of the things I love is EVP, the idea that sound is coming from somewhere and we don't know where. And, you know, the closest thing I ever got to finding where it was coming from in a room was to make a very simple framework of recorders and literally pinpoint where the sound was coming from within 2 feet. After that, I got kicked out of the museum. It took 3 years to learn that much. I know you
were quadrilating it.
Yeah, that's about as good as I got. But once again, that's miles ahead of most people who are running around with the matching t-shirts. My thought is, you know, I know you've worked with Dave Rowntree before.
Yes.
And you've had many conversations with him about that Rosen Bridge. Can you tell me a little tiny bit about the theory more about behind that? Because I know that if I'm looking for EVP strictly, one thing I've observed in many, like, just straight up EVP, like just recorded by itself, is almost like a whipping sound before or after a voice would come through. Does that have anything to do with that Rosen Bridge, do you think? Or am I just jumping at something here?
Now, we have to understand now, I have to take a few minutes to explain a couple things because I have to give some background.
Okay.
David Rowntree came up with his idea of a theory of the paranormal based on his experiments and correlating and examining the results over many years. And he's also an expert in acoustics, so he has some things going on that other investigators just don't have in their possession. What I did was I started from theory. I was strictly a pencil pusher, saying, given all these observations, what is happening with paranormal phenomena? How's it coming about? And so his cause is different than my cause, but the effect, we independently came up with the exact same model of what the space-time structure would be that a paranormal event would emerge from. Now, anybody that's scientifically trained and is also familiar with the paranormal and heard that statement and accepted it as true would be on the floor right now. I mean, what I just said is monstrous. It makes finding something like this makes physicists weep because they've fulfilled their life's work. You know, so that's one aspect of it. The other aspect I need to talk about for a minute, John, that everybody forgets in the paranormal field, and a lot of times in theoretical physics, we forget about it too. Information. You heard me mention it before. Mm-hmm. In school, John, we were all taught matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. You know, it was parroted to us. Mm-hmm. It relates back to the mass energy conservation laws, which were introduced by Einstein in the most famous equation in human history, E equals MC squared. Both sides of the equation are equivalent. And so matter and energy or mass and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. They can be converted to one form or the other. But over the last handful of years, physics has come up with an extension to those conservation laws. And we've come to understand that the information which comprises the mass and energy, which actually is the blueprint for them, itself can neither be created nor destroyed. And the idea of information is often forgotten. In the paranormal field, it's almost completely unheard of or unthought about. So, I mean, when we're talking about an EVP, what we are talking about is literally, And if you learn to look at it this way, things will become clearer when we think about paranormal phenomena. It is materializing information. It is information that is materializing and actually becomes fully materialized. Now, here's the problem, though. There still has to be a way to propagate an acoustic wave, or in an EVP, an electromagnetic wave. This is one of the predictions of supergeometric theory, that we should be able to record an EVP in a vacuum because it's electromagnetic in nature. It imposes itself directly onto the microphone components and bypasses the acoustic diaphragm.
Hey, didn't David do that in the Bell jar, though?
Yeah, and that's what blew his mind when we first got on an interview. A host had brought the two of us together. She had actually brought Roundtree in because she was completely incapable of, she felt completely incapable to interview someone like me. And so when I said, according to my theory, we should be able to record an EVP in a vacuum. And he says, well, I conducted that experiment. This is what I found. You know, according to my theory, we should be able to measure an independent gravitational field emerging. I conducted that experiment, and that's what I found. And with each successive exchange like that, you could hear his voice begin to trail off. He was in a state of shock. Here was a man that came up with a theoretical model that actually predicted the experimental results he was getting. But mine was a little bit different because I didn't look at what was strictly physical, as he was, because he was looking at physical evidence. So anyway, if we have information materializing, and let's say we have a normal voice, let's say, for example, I talk about this expanding bubble of space-time, which I call a differential field bubble. It has a lot in similarity with the mouth of an Einstein-Rosen bridge. Its actual physical structure in space-time and its characteristics in the presence of material content, not in the vacuum of space, but in the presence of material content like air molecules. Both of those structures would behave very similarly. But what I'm talking about is information that is coming from outside the physical. Call it what you want. Call it the spirit world. David Bohm, one of the most famous physicists in the 20th century, called it implicate order that gave rise to explicate order. David Finkelstein called it coherent superpositions. Aristotle called it forms, or Plato, rather. If we take a look at a lot of people who are familiar maybe with Edgar Cayce, Edgar Cayce called it the Akasha. Mm-hmm. It's this library, this body of information. And when it passes into our space-time through one of these bubbles, it begins to materialize. And according to my theory, what happens as that bubble expands, it creates tension in the surrounding air or the surrounding material that excites the atoms inside of it and their electrons that in turn causes them to rise in their valences and generate an electromagnetic field. And so what happens as this information is materialized, if we're talking about a voice, it is actually materializing on that outer edge of that bubble. And here's the freaky thing. Now we know what the vocal cords are that are speaking this voice. It's the air itself, not the air. It's space-time itself. It's actually the fabric of space-time vibrating with waves that are, according to the frequency and amplitude of the information being materialized, that then induces itself on the air, just like the fabric of a speaker. And then it agitates the air, and then the air, the propagating wave through the air travels through our eardrums, and we hear a normal voice. The vocal cords are the actual fabric of space-time itself. Which is crazy, but it's consistent with relativity. And now, if it happens at a different energy level, it can still vibrate the electromagnetic field, causing that bubble to propagate an electromagnetic wave carrying the acoustic information on it. But since it's an electromagnetic wave, it induces itself directly on the coils of the microphone in the recorder. Our ears can't hear it because it's electromagnetic. But when we play the recorder back, we hear the voice. And this is how part of how supergeometric theory finally lifts the veil on what I call paranormal mechanics and actually explains not only what is physically going on, but it makes predictions that are experimentally testable, and some have already been confirmed. This is beyond, so far beyond anything that exists in the paranormal field and the paranormal community right now, that many of the people I've spoken to have trouble even trying to comprehend it.
I think the only reason why I have an easier time comprehending is because I've read your book so many times. It takes time to learn a new subject. It is a different language, basically. There's no doubt. And
And, you know, when we're talking about, in other words, it's common in the field that they say, well, residual hauntings means that the ghost was somehow recorded on the background of the environment. And that's just another way of saying we have no idea what's going on. Because if you take a look at the environment and the materials that are available, there isn't any material in that structure that would, A, be able to record the event, B, be able to have the energy to store the event, the information, and C, at a given time, not only be able to play back the information, but also to project it at a specific location in space-time. And then if it's an apparition that's moving or you hear a voice is trailing or footsteps, that same material like the drywall or a stone underneath the building or something would actually have to be like a projector that pans that would move across the room and projecting this as the footsteps go down the hall. So is this saying that it doesn't happen? No, it does happen. It's just saying that all the conventional explanations that have existed in the field are wrong.
Well, one of the things I've always kind of wondered about actually was, you know, with EVP, obviously a sound, we kind of touched already, but the whole full body apparition, it kind of doesn't jive actually with a lot of the stuff, because if there is a full body apparition and we see it, it has to exist in our reality. It has to reflect light. So do you think that an apparition could be coming from an emergence point as well? I'm just trying to grasp this in layman's terms as best I can.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Now, because again, and John, you pick up a good point. I can hear in what you're saying some of your thinking behind your question. Mm-hmm. Is that we've got people that had tried to come up with great explanations for what an EVP is. But when you look at an apparition, it doesn't apply at all. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with it. But if we take that grand principle of materializing information,
yes,
okay, now everything becomes much clearer because an apparition is a materialization of information. We know it's material because, like you said, what it's doing, it is propagating, it's carrying that information on modulations of an electromagnetic radiation wave. Except it's happening in the light band. So, and those waves come into our eyes, and then our retinas react to it, and we're able to see a coherent, meaningful image from this information. So, it is presenting a surface that either reflects or emits light. Now, if we take a look at many films of apparitions, and, you know, I say some of them got to be legitimate. I know there's stuff that's faked out there. I know that. We all know that. But overall, John, if you really study them, you will notice that the apparition has the same kind of luminous quality as a normal body would be in that same position, that normal object, in the same ambient light. The vast majority of apparitions actually reflect ambient light. Just as if there was a real body there, it would look at the same light level, same lack of color. The only difference is that there's no local body manifesting or causing the image. So, yes, we are looking at something in most cases that reflects light. In very, very rare cases, we actually have luminous phenomena, which would be the emergence of photons out of the electrons that are collapsing back down in the lower valences from the quote-unquote artificially created electromagnetic field. It would work just like an LED does. Or it presents a surface that absorbs all light, just like a black object would. And that's what we would call a shadow ghost. If it was completely black, if there was no light in the room at all, no radiation, no UV, no infrared cameras, if everything was completely black, the only thing that you could see is luminous phenomena. Any kind of an apparition, a normal apparition, would also be invisible.
I love this. I can listen to this all night. But I'm going to change subject just a little tiny bit, because there's something I love listening to, because I've heard you talk about this before, and that's the idea of synchronicity. Things are in order in our lives. This idea that things just line up sometimes. I love to hear you talk about this, and this one's just for me. Thomas, talk a little tiny bit about synchronicity and how it kind of goes along with your theory as well.
If I remember correctly, it was Carl Jung that came up with the term synchronicity. And he defined it as meaningful coincidence. And, you read my book, I came up with a new classification of paranormal phenomena. And I give it five different classifications. But synchronicity, I kept the original word. And what this talks about is that there is a greater pattern of information in which lesser patterns exist, subsystems to the greater pattern. Now, if the universe is still emerging from the singularity, as supergeometry maintains, then we have these subsystems that are continuing to emerge into our physical reality. And so you have two people or two events that look synchronous. They're being materialized by the same body of information in two different places in space, or simply at two different places in time. And that's pretty, when you start thinking about it that way, instead of just shrugging your shoulders and say, gee, it's coincidence, which is a word we use to describe a phenomenon we don't understand, so we use the term coincidence. I mean, what you're talking about, let me give you an illustration. One picture's worth a 1,000 words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus feeding thousands of people with only five loaves of bread and two fishes is an example of synchronous materialization. That the same material pattern, the same information pattern is materializing in thousands of different locations, coordinates in space, at the same coordinate in time.
I love the idea that, you know, there's a laid out plan for us all. I love that. It kind of gives me some comfort, I guess. But, you know, on the very tail end of comfort, there comes the unknown. And I'm so glad there's somebody out there like Thomas Fusco, who's really just still plugging away at this, still doing interviews. Thomas, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. I'm going to kind of mention everybody that your website's going to be in the show notes, but it is Behind the Cosmic Veil. And guys, Veil, V-E-I-L, if you're looking for that website, Cosmic Veil, correct?
Yes, V-E-I-L, one word, Cosmic Veil.
Check him out online, guys. Pick up his book, Behind the Cosmic Veil. I love this thing. It's just really, really helps me refute people. When I was back in the day doing the ghost hunting thing and everyone made fun of me, I'm like, yeah, well, this isn't even figured out yet. And it was actually quite used for ammo, really, in a lot of ways. But Thomas, thanks so much for taking the time tonight. And I just got to get you back on in the future. I think the people are going to really love this show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show, John. I appreciate it.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.